In November of 2019, the South African Cultural Observatory partnered with a group of UK academics to track how graphic designers, filmmakers, music producers and the like are using a fusion to drive growth. And Cape Town was chosen for a pilot study because of its reputation as a creative city. Joining me on the line now is a professor of economics and researcher at the South African Cultural Observatory at Rhodes University, Professor Jen Snowball. Jen, a very good morning and welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Perhaps a little bit more about the survey, and before we start talking about what you found, what was the objective behind it?
One of the things we noticed was that when government and civil society and researchers talk about innovation, they tend to focus on science, technology, engineering and maths, the so-called STEM sector. But in fact, there's lots of innovation going on in the arts and culture sector as well. So this was kind of an attempt to see exactly what was going on there and how these sometimes smaller creative firms are combining different kinds of skills to come up with really interesting, innovative business ideas.
And I imagine a lot of that innovation actually driven by technology, isn't it?
To some extent, yeah. But it's more about the crossover between technology and creative or cultural skills. So one of our important questions was, to what extent are ideas from the creative arts and combining them with technology important for your business model? And like 65% of the firms that we talked to said important or very important. So the idea that there's this sort of sharp divide between the arts, culture, creative sector, and then science and technology is actually not how businesses work in reality.
So what did you find? I totally agree that Cape Town obviously has a reputation as a creative city. My word, we have more fintech, biotech, anything tech kind of creative agencies that reside and exist in Cape Town and head office here, actually. I absolutely agree that we are a creative city. What did you find in your research?
We found a whole lot of interesting stuff. I mean, firstly, that a lot of these firms are not where you might look for innovation initially. So there were things like designers, architects, people who are doing any kind of audiovisual, museums, performing arts, photography, publishing. So like a really wide range of firms. And a lot of them are starting to kind of increase the speed of their growth as a result of these kind of innovative ways that they're putting technology and the creative arts together. So one of the interesting things we found is that most of them are small and they started up in like the last 5 or 10 years, so they're quite new. And they look small in terms of permanent employees, but then what they do is that around a specific project or commission that they get, they kind of expand massively by using a whole team of really diverse freelancers. So they draw on kind of a whole lot of different kind of people to bring in the skills that they need around a specific project. And this makes them very powerful because it means that they can kind of take on just about anything, draw together these teams very quickly, and then produce an interesting, innovative kind of a project. They also said that it was very important for them to be in Cape Town, that made a difference because it gave them access to all these different kinds of skills, but also just exposure to new ideas, new technologies, and of course, business, looking for new kinds of business.
In fact, one of the issues you highlight is that the exclusion of the cultural and creative sector from South Africa's draft white paper on science, technology and innovation, which I think was published in 2018, is a mistake. Why?
Well, because I think the way you understand innovation, or the way, you know, we as a society understand innovation, has been so focused on kind of technology and the new idea that you patent and use. But in fact, even sort of looking back in history, we can see that some new and extremely useful ideas didn't come from formal high-tech kind of businesses. You know, they came from interesting combinations of different kinds of skills. And one of the things we found out with the creatives in Cape Town was that very few of them, almost all of them, do some kind of innovation, be it business innovation or process innovation, or, you know, the way that they're producing their goods and services. But hardly any of them use any kind of formal instrument to protect their intellectual property. And that might be because they're just not thinking in that mode, or because they don't think it's useful, or it might be because they don't actually know all that much about how the IP system works, you know. So only 11% said that they kind of got any protection from formal intellectual property. And that means that South Africa could be, as a country, could be losing out on some of our good ideas, you know. So by including the cultural in our understanding of innovation, we can do two things. Firstly, improve innovation by saying, well, we define it more broadly. It's not just somebody in a lab inventing something. It could be anybody, a musician, a museum, a performer, a designer, who's come up with some new and interesting kind of idea. And we want to empower and encourage those people to own their invention or innovation, so that they can make some money from that, and so that South Africa can hang on to its intellectual property. Yeah.
I mean, we see that in the explosion of Silicon Valley, for example, or the disruptive technologies, if you like, that go into the accommodation industry, or even the meter taxi industry. It is the ownership of that intellectual property that then makes those companies explode and become these multinationals in the way and the manner that they have.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you know, what we want to avoid is that the idea gets taken up by somebody else, turned into a platform providing a service, and then, you know, the local inventor loses out. So, we do want to find some way of monetizing all the great stuff that the creative industries are doing. And I mean, a lot of the interesting new business models like freemium and microtransactions, the kind of online things that are happening, are coming from the creative sector, right? So it's inside video games that microtransactions begin to become a thing. You know, you pay like a tiny little amount for some small advantage, but you can download and play the game for free, and that just works brilliantly for lots of people who are playing online games. So it's the business models themselves that we also want to try and hang on to some extent. But I must say, since your previous guests were talking about the COVID-19, the production model that these firms follow does make them quite vulnerable to situations where GDP or economic growth has a sudden decline. And that's because they're small firms and they rely a lot on freelancers. So you've got this big team of freelancers, often skilled and educated, right? This is not at all survivalist stuff. This is, you know, people doing short-term contract work, but in quite a precarious way. So they don't have a permanent contract with anybody. They don't have UIF access. You know, if they've got pension funds, they've set them up themselves. And so when you have a sudden downturn, like now, then there's really little protection for those freelancers. So it does make them quite a vulnerable sector, not only in terms of being able to protect their intellectual property, but being able to continue operating during a shutdown.
As we see in various many sectors, particularly in the creative industries, actually. Jane, parting question from me. National government has an important role to play, right, in setting the policy work that will, policy framework that will then ultimately protect these creative industries in South Africa. But I imagine it will ultimately be the cities who are driving and putting in place incentives for these creative agencies to operate in their space. I know there's an extraordinary amount of work being done by the City of Cape Town and they implementing partners like Westgrow, for example, in making sure that agencies or creative minds in this space are seeing Cape Town as an attractive destination for them to head office their operations here.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, one of the reasons we chose Cape Town was because of Westgrow and the work that they've been doing there. So the focus on the creative city identity and the importance of supporting, be they firms or freelancers that are in that space. And it's also important for innovation, you know, to happen. It's just that informal kind of mixing of different people who are in different sort of parts of the economy. Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. National is important, so that gives us the overall kind of guiding policy. But the local makes a huge difference as well. So that's definitely, I think, one of the driving things behind Cape Town is just the recognition of the importance of the sector, which has been there for a while. But maybe we just wanted to add the innovation kind of layer, right? That these are not kind of firms that are just producing things one by one and the same thing over and over. They're actually almost every project is different and requires some kind of interesting mix of skills and fusion of ideas, which I think comes across quite strongly. And then, I mean, just a final thing for me, what I found really interesting was the mix of skills that these firms are hiring, right? So because I work in the university space, and then quite often you say, well, you know, arts and humanities, you kind of, what kind of a job do you think you're going to get? And the answer is, well, pretty much anything you want, you know. So when we asked what were the educational qualifications of the Cape Town cluster employees, I mean, it was really a mix. So design was a big part of it, 50%, and then arts and humanities, 42%. And then they mixed that, 32% of economics, business management, and 20% of the hard STEM. And that was their permanent employees. And then they'd pull in all these other freelancers. So I think we're moving away from the idea that if you've got expertise or a degree or skills in one area, then you can't cross over into other areas, because it's exactly those crossovers that are producing the great innovative ideas.
Couldn't agree more. Jen, thank you very much. A wonderful paper published in The Conversation. It's titled Cape Town's Creative Firms Are Business Innovators, But They're Vulnerable. Professor Jen Snowball is the Professor of Economics as well as researcher at the South African Cultural Observatory, which is based at Rhodes University.